So for with scoliosis, a lot of times it's the convex side, so the side that is the outward curvature, is the tight side. So most of the time, this is where people, they come to me and they say, it's really tight and it's tight all the time. Should I stretch it? And I say, well, let's think about this first. Let's kind of slow it down a little bit, because very rarely is stretching the solution. Very rarely. And it is that side that is chronically overstretched. It is always in an overstretched situation. That's why it's tight, because those muscles are kind of holding on for dear life,
right,
to make sure you're not collapsing over to the side.
Christine Joregiberry, thank you for joining me on the Mindful Movement Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Did I nail the last name there?
Did I? You get it did. Right? You right. did. And you're probably the first one ever to get it right immediately. So
nice.
Well done.
I did practice to prepare. Christine, I appreciate you reaching out to me. I always appreciate when somebody reaches out to me directly and say, I think we have a good conversation here, and I think you were right. I have an extensive history in the movement field, but know very little about anything specific around or to do with scoliosis. And it seems like you've built quite a platform on like a niche of helping people with scoliosis use movement to make some kind of progress in their sense of well-being. And that seems like important work. And wanted to hear more about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel that there is, or I felt for a long time, that there was a little bit of a gap. There is a lot of help out there for scoliosis for younger people, especially in the teenage years when they are diagnosed with adolescent idiopathic scoliosis. And then once we get to the adult years, then all of the sudden, they're kind of, everybody's left to their own devices. You either have had surgery or you've had some treatment. Maybe you've had a brace. Or it wasn't severe enough to do anything about it. And then you're kind of left to go out and do your own thing. But most people at some point realize or figure out that it does affect them, especially as we're getting older as well.
Yeah, I think it's important and empowering to realize that you can affect it. I've seen kind of miraculous before and after pictures of people going through different modalities to make a big impact on scoliosis. And it's really profound. And I think it's important for people to realize that you're not, you know, even if there's like a genetic component of why things occurred, you're not necessarily stuck with that. Can we start with, I guess, how you would define scoliosis and maybe where it comes from, maybe how common it is, some of the basics?
Yeah. So scoliosis is a sideward curvature with a rotation, and that's very important to understand. So a lot of people might have seen an X-ray of a spine that looks like an S or looks like a reverse S or a C curve. Those are kind of the main patterns that we see with scoliosis. But it's only called scoliosis if it has a Cobb angle, and this is the angle that they measure the curve at. If that is higher than 10 degrees. So this is also important to understand, I think, that, you know, at 9 degrees, you don't have scoliosis. At 11 degrees, you do have scoliosis.
That seems silly.
It seems very silly, but it's one of those things that obviously had to be defined by the medical world. But from a mindset point of view, that changes everything, right? With one of them, you've got a diagnosis, you've got a condition, and with the other one you don't, but you might have very similar symptoms.
And that's in both planes, both the frontal and transverse plane, I guess. It's not, or can it be sagittal also? Can this be, so anything in the kind of forward and back plane doesn't really relate to what scoliosis is referring to. It's really like a sideways bend and or a rotational twist?
Yes, exactly. So if we talk about the normal curves of the spine, our spines obviously have curves and they are natural curves. When you're looking at somebody from the side, we've got an outward curvature in the thoracic spine, which is called a kyphosis, and then a lordosis in the lower back. So they are the normal curves that we want to have as well. They are really good. They help us with movement. But then when you look at somebody from the back, nobody has a perfect spine, of course, but generally we have a kind of a straight line up and down. And with scoliosis, that is different. That will then go into a sideward curvature, but it also, the spine is also rotated. And you can see this if some people that have scoliosis, especially if it's more significant, they might have a little bit of a prominence, we call it, on one side. So a little bit of a hump on one side, but not on the other side. So everything looks a bit round on one side and then flatter on the other side. It's more visible in the upper spine than in the lower spine. But that's really when we see that there is a structural scoliosis.
And I assume there's also imbalances from the patterns that we compensate with around those to transfer force as we navigate through our lives, that you'll get more muscle development on one side relative to the other, and that relationship might zigzag kind of as the compensation goes from the ground all the way up.
Exactly, absolutely. So as we're getting older, we kind of settle into our pattern. Basically, when in the younger years, obviously we're still growing and there's still kind of a little bit of finding our way. But then as adults, those curves, they settle generally. They don't tend to progress unless it's a more significant curve, more over kind of 35, 40 degrees. But there is this muscle component, as you mentioned, obviously, around this. So you have your structure, but then your muscles adapt, and then your muscles can actually pull you further into your scoliosis pattern. So for example, if I am getting a little bit tired here, I will slowly start to kind of collapse a little bit more into my sideward curvature with rotation. And that is then the muscles adapting. And they then obviously think that this is a normal thing to do. This is a good thing. So they will start to pull me even further into the scoliosis pattern. And this is really important to understand, because that is really what we can affect with our movement practice as well. And this is where we can make a big, big difference.
So is it safe to say you have personally dealt with this over the years, I assume?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So I was diagnosed as a child and I had a kind of scoliosis. So nothing too severe, some 25 degrees, which still sounds quite, quite substantial. And if you do look at my x-ray, I mean, I showed it to my dad at some point and he was like, oh my goodness, how can you even walk around? But you wouldn't be able to, if you just see me like this, you would probably not notice this at all. I've also been always quite active. So I've always been into movement. So as a child, I did have some physiotherapy. At some point, they did give me a heel lift in the shoes because they thought in the 80s that that was the way to kind of sort it out. At some point, they treated everything with a heel lift, I think.
I had someone give me a heel lift once. Very short-lived experiment.
Yes. I did wear it for a few years in my kind of late teens, early 20s. But it's the time when you know, as a young person, you go out, you wear different shoes. You know, at some point I thought, this is ridiculous. In every single shoe, I have to have this kind of 1.5 centimeter heel lift, because otherwise I would feel completely imbalanced, right? It just didn't work out that way. So this is kind of, that was the turning point for me when I was like, okay, I did have a lot of back pain at that point. I did see chiropractors, osteopaths, acupuncturists, everyone, you know, can you fix this? Can you sort out this problem? Nothing ever had kind of a lasting effect. And this is really when I started to dig a little bit deeper and I started to practice yoga, which helped pretty much immediately. I don't know why, but it did help immediately. I did go through a bit of a phase where I got a little bit obsessed. I think when we find something that helps, we can kind of get really into it. And that was definitely me in my 20s when I practiced Ashtanga yoga 4 times a week. And I arrived at a point where I was like, well, there's one side of my body that is behaving very differently to the other side. And actually, I'm getting stronger on one side, but the other side doesn't really seem to be doing. I also noticed, like, in Ashtanga, you've got some very end range twists and things like this. I was like, oh, I'm like an owl. I can twist all the way around on one side, but then on the other side, I can't. I get completely stuck. So there were kind of these things. And then I had a great yoga teacher at the time, and she mentioned a lady called Elise Browning Miller, who is in the Iyengar system. And she is kind of the, I call her the queen of yoga for scoliosis, because she was, you know, she was a student of BKS Iyengar directly. And then she has a very kind of very severe, much more severe scoliosis than me. And she kind of developed this system for specific curvatures to help. So I found that very, very interesting and started to dig a little bit deeper into this. And then I came across lots of people with very kind of interesting, conflicting views as well of how to treat this condition, or what we can do about it. So this is kind of how I got into it. And I am interested in science, you know, what is actually working. So I did kind of talk to a lot of physiotherapists. Schroth therapy is a kind of scoliosis specific therapy. And if you have a family member with scoliosis, you might want to look into this as well. It's very interesting.
What is it called? How can you spell that?
Schroth. So it's S-C-H-R-O-T-H. And this is, it's a German method of treating scoliosis. This is really clinical. So this is physiotherapy. It's hands-on. Gotcha. They have very specific exercises. There's a lot of things. You have to be very, very, you have to work with somebody really in the room to kind of help you with this. So for me, this was interesting. I took some of their principles into my own practice. But really, for me, movement is about enjoying it. I do like to enjoy my movement. I don't want to be doing exercise to, you know, just to treat my scoliosis basically for the rest of my life. So I think this is where yoga and Pilates come in, because they can really be super helpful if we approach it in the right way, and if we start to kind of acknowledge some of those patterns that I was talking about before.
Gotcha. Do you have any thoughts, Christine, on the causes of scoliosis? At the Mindful Movement Podcast, we talk a lot about the small shifts that make a big difference. And lighting, it's one of the most overlooked pieces of your well-being. That's why we're excited to share Chromalux light bulbs from healthlighting.com. These aren't your average light bulbs. Chromalux lights are designed to support your natural rhythms, reducing unnatural light spectrums and supporting a more balanced environment that feels better for your eyes and your mind. The difference is not just seen, but felt. Whether you're curating your workspace, winding down in the evening, or just trying to make your home feel a little more peaceful, the right light matters. Sarah and I have been steadily making the switch throughout our home, and its impact really makes a difference. It's honestly kind of hard to explain, but the space has become noticeably more inviting. If you're ready to bring more intention into your environment, head to healthlighting.com and explore Chromalux bulbs. And as a part of our mindful community, you can get a special discount. Just use code MINDFULMOVEMENT at checkout. Light your space, support your mind, and keep on moving. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you've probably heard me talk about how important it is to regulate your nervous system. This goes for healing, for focus, for just overall emotional well-being. But the reality is that even if we know the tools to help do this, whether it's breathing or meditation or just slowing down, it can still be really hard to stay regulated throughout a busy day. That's one reason I've really been interested in the Apollo Wearable by Apollo Neuro. Sarah and I both use this device regularly and have found it very beneficial. It's a small wearable device that uses gentle vibrations, and they're designed to signal safety to your nervous system. What's fascinating is that those signals can help your body shift out of a stress state and into a calmer, more regulated state. What I like about it most of all is that even though it can work great alongside practices like meditation or breath work, the real value is that you can wear it throughout your day, even while you're at work, and just let it work its magic on your nervous system. The other standout use that I rely on is wearing it to bed. Not only does it help me fall asleep fast, but I often wake up around 3 a.m. and I can just tap the button on it and it will help lull me back to sleep quickly. If you want to learn more, check out the podcast episode with the founder, David Rabin, and you could explore more about the technology itself. But if you're someone that struggles with anxiety or feeling wired or overwhelmed, or you're simply looking for more nervous system support in daily life, it might be something worth exploring. You can learn more about the Apollo Wearable and how it works and save $99 on a new device at apolloneuro.com/mindful or click the link in the show notes. I promise you won't regret this investment. I truly believe it's the best bang for the buck in the wellness tech space.
Well, it's called idiopathic scoliosis, which basically means nobody knows.
Do you have it? I mean,
where this is coming
from? I've heard some ideas of where some of it comes from. I mean, I assume there's probably multiple things that can drive it.
There'll be multiple things. So there is a genetic component, 30% of it. So I have family members with scoliosis as well. I've heard
but
things.
But does that necessarily mean that there's a genetic component? I mean, could that be an environmental thing that people that are in the same family often have similar environmental inputs?
It could be. It could be learned, right? It could be habits.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I've even heard things of, I mean, this goes into very emotional aspects of it, right? So
like the way you hold yourself posturally,
the way you hold yourself,
how you feel about yourself, or
yes, exactly the way you hold. I don't want to go too much into this because people get a little bit distressed about this.
Understandable.
But you know, I have heard people talk about relationship with your father, relationship with your mother, right? How does this kind of affect?
You know, the zigzag nature that often accompanies it, meaning like you'll have this where, like, you know, it might be your ankle on one side affects the knee on the other, the hip on the other, the back on the other, and it like zigzags its way. I mean, I wonder how much scoliosis is out there, especially as an adult, if you didn't really noticeably have something as a kid that at least didn't show as a problem, was from like spraining your ankle. And then, you know, 5 years of compensation gives you low back pain and some kind of zigzag that is accompanying that. Because maybe the way you like transfer force in the ground when your right foot strikes the ground upon your gait is different than your left, or maybe the way you manage rotational forces in the body when the right leg is extending right to the left or so forth could show up in various ways. I heard that there is a nutritional component, which I found very interesting.
Yeah.
Because, I guess when we're in the womb, there's this like race against time to get everything developed in time before you pop out, like, because you can't be in there too long because you eventually, like, there's a limit of how big you can get and still get out safely. So there's certain nutrients, I think, especially around like energy production and growth, like some of the B vitamins that are I guess common for a mother, expecting mother to, like, the demands are way up and it's harder for them to meet those demands. And sometimes, like, it equates to some of the growth aspects being a little uneven. Like, they didn't, like, you didn't get done cooking before you popped out of the oven. And there's like a little zigzag, and then maybe it starts off small, but then, like you say, like it, the pattern, the structural change, your architecture being off a little bit, encourages more of the pattern that makes it get like bigger as you get older, like a bigger shift. I don't know. That's an interesting idea. I don't know if it's true, but I've heard that there's certain things like that could show up that way because you just didn't have the optimal amount of nutrition when you're in the womb to get all the pieces finished of the puzzle. Yeah. And there's like such a complex puzzle there.
The thing is we don't, so for most people, for most teenagers, it develops between the ages of 11 to 15. Now, this is kind of a general thing. There are kids that have it earlier. There are kids that have it from birth. Gotcha. And then there's a whole other demographic of people that actually develop it later on. So you asked me about how common it is, obviously, before. So I think what's interesting to know, it's that 7 to 1 women, first of all. So it's much affects much more women than men. There is also, they're doing a lot of research.
That? Is that because of like the change in like the hip structure during puberty maybe?
Hormonal. You know, we know that, so the other component that affects this is hypermobility. So a lot of people that have scoliosis, this is a lot more research coming out now, this is kind of newer research, have got hypermobility. And when I look, I work obviously with a lot of people with scoliosis, the typical profile, and I'm not saying everybody, but the typical profile, they look like me. So they're fairly slender. They tend to be female. It usually becomes a problem over kind of in their 50s and 60s. Again, when they have gone through another hormonal change. So it's when the spine is just a little bit, there's much more going on. There's a lot of shifts and changes. And that's when, if you have a little bit of an asymmetry, then it can start to obviously get exaggerated. This is why they put kids in a brace. Right, because they don't want them to be too flexible, because that's the problem with a lot of the younger kids. They want the spine to be much more stable, stability, and then growing up from there.
You mentioned that yoga almost immediately helped, and I also wonder. I've heard people talk about kind of using breathing mechanics to help facilitate, like supporting the straightening, if you will, of a bent spine. And you know, if anybody out there's practiced, there's generally, unless you have like maybe an uninformed instructor, there's generally a pretty big breath component to a yoga practice. And I wonder if some of the benefits come from kind of like properly filling the balloon, if you will, from the center and like pressurizing the trunk of the body in a way that facilitates like a expansion, if you will, or a lengthening of that space.
Exactly. That's exactly it. So in Schroth therapy, they talk a lot about this as well. So we've got this image. If you imagine a Pilates ball and you don't completely inflate it, but you give it a little bit of a dent, this kind of gives you a little bit of a good picture of what this might look like. So, for example, if you have a thoracic scoliosis, so in your thoracic spine, and you have this prominence on one side where the rib cage is kind of expanded outwards. Now, on the other side, that is pushed forwards. Yeah, so people might have ribs sticking out at the front. Everybody always pays attention to that prominence, to the hump, because it doesn't look very nice. But really, it's the other side that is much more under pressure and that is much more interesting. And that's the area that we're thinking about affecting with the breath and, as you say, banding into it. And a lot of people, when you ask them to breathe, and especially people who have been practicing yoga, Pilates, who are a bit more body aware, they will find that their breath just expands into one side. And it doesn't really into the other side when they start to pay attention to
this. That makes sense.
So that's really,
so
that's a
what,
really
what would
good
be an
practice.
example in that case, like laying down and kind of bending, giving the space for the stuck side to be there, and then breathing so that you're kind of forcing the breath into that side?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Side lying is a really, really lovely pose. Now, I don't recommend this on a kind of firm, on a foam roller or something, but like a soft, maybe a rolled up blanket,
pillows,
maybe a yoga bolster, and you lie on your side. You would lie on this side that we call the convex side, so where the outward curvature is, and then you breathe into the opposite side to allow for it to expand. So this is a really nice practice to do.
And for listeners, just if you do go try things and you're experiencing scoliosis, or if you don't, you're just exploring with like kind of a more, I don't want to say extreme, you know, challenging positions of your spine.
Yeah.
You know, listen to your body. Like you,
yes,
you can probably overdo things if you're
anything
too aggressive, even if it's something that's good for you.
It, yeah.
You know, you should probably go slow and make sure you have a good response to it.
Yes. And this is what I said in the beginning where I was getting obsessed, right?
Gotcha.
Because I felt some benefits, but then you kind of get really, really into it. And the other danger is obviously, especially if you tend to be on the hypermobile side, the problem with hypermobility is that there's things we don't feel. That's why we are hypermobile. We are lacking sensitivity in a way. A stiff person has got much more of an advantage there because their body will hold them back. They'll be like, oh, I can't touch my toes.
Gotcha.
Right? Whereas a hypermobile person, they can go all the way. That doesn't mean their muscles are longer. It just means that they are less, they don't feel it. So this is kind of the area where you do want to be, yeah, going really slow.
And that's interesting you say, because there's a gender thing going on there. You say it's 7-1 women to men, and you know, women are just generally more mobile for sure.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I also wonder though, men are just stubborn. Like men are probably less likely to go get diagnosed. You know, if, like something's not
yes.
right. Ah, it's fine. I'll be fine. You know, they might be less likely to like open up and even tell the adult in their life that feels something not right. Or
yeah, yeah. So I do have, what is interesting actually, I don't know if, you know, that might be a general thing, obviously, with classes as well. Women enjoy group environments, I think, much more and that kind of group classes. So I have a lot of people that come to me that are women who have been doing some sort of group exercise all their life. And then I have men that come and they're like, I found out I've got scoliosis. We need to do something about it, right? I've never done any exercise in my life, but now, I need to do something about it.
So you have a very successful YouTube channel, Move with Scoliosis is the name of it?
Yes, yeah.
So
right.
You provide kind of like follow along videos of helping people that are trying to manage their scoliosis with like using movement as a lever to work with?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So one of the kind of the major things that I found is there's a lack of understanding. There's a lack of education. You can go, I mean, I live in the UK now. You can go to see your doctor and most of the time, they will say, oh, you've got scoliosis. We can't do anything about it. So off you go, right? Now, that is not really helpful, right? This kind of scares a lot of people, right? And they might even have Americans, I find, because you pay for healthcare, you have much more information about your diagnosis usually. So usually when I work with Americans, they'll have an X-ray. They will have some sort of report of their cob angles and all of that.
Wait, so there's a benefit to not having socialized healthcare? Did you hear that? Just noted.
Noted. Well, it makes you more serious. if you want something fixed, you are usually really serious about it, right? Whereas we in the UK, we maybe just go and see, ah, okay, nothing can be done about it. And it also makes you much more proactive, I think, in looking for alternative ways and solutions of fixing your problem. And what I do think is really important with scoliosis is that you understand and you know what's going on and you understand your body, especially if you want to work with it with movement.
Yeah, that makes sense. Other than the videos that you provide on the YouTube, do you offer other services, like more personalized or group sessions, or do you do anything in person? Or
I do. So I have my little yoga studio here just for one-to-one sessions. If people are in my area, it's always a great benefit, obviously, if we can see each other in person, because you always get a much better perspective and see exactly what's going on, obviously. So my YouTube channel is always a great place to start. There's a lot of videos on there so depending on if you know already what your curvature is, what type of curvature you've got, you can look at more specific videos for your type of curve. Or if you're just kind of starting out and have just been diagnosed and you just want to kind of start to understand what's going on. So this is always kind of a good starting place. And then I do have a membership for people who are looking for kind of an ongoing practice. And I teach yoga and I teach Pilates. I think that combination works really, really well. There's components that we need with scoliosis, and we get that in Pilates from the stability practice, from the core strengthening. We get it from yoga with the relaxation and the release and kind of gentle mobility. So we don't do any headstands or anything like that. Gotcha. You know, we keep it really, really sensible in that way. And then obviously, I work with people one-to-one as well.
You mentioned the Schroth therapy. Did I say that right?
Yes, yeah.
Are there any other like modalities that you have either seen or witnessed or heard that are also useful? Like, from what I understand, are you familiar with like Rolfing, like Ida Rolf?
Yes, I've never experienced it myself, but yes, I have heard that
people have Feldenkrais, had success with that. Are there any other like modalities or therapies that you know are useful for people?
When you kind of, are you saying kind of exercise?
No, like people have used for scoliosis that, I don't know, have been helpful.
Yeah, so I mean, the more specific, the better, really, when we're talking about scoliosis. You know, other things that are always recommended is things like swimming, because it's a movement that is, you're not under load, you're in the water, and you're doing quite symmetrical movements, and you're strengthening your back and strengthening your body. So that is a really, really good one. And then on the flip side, the things that you might not want to do is things like trampolining, for example. So it's just that force, that kind of the force that you can imagine, right, when you're kind of going down, that it puts a lot of pressure onto, and it will take you again further into your pattern as well. So but otherwise, you know, it's being active is key. That's really the most important thing.
Yeah, so it's interesting, like the idea of wanting to do something that has something symmetrical to it. It makes me wonder, like if you have a noticeable asymmetry, like you alluded to noticing when you were doing like twists, like you were now in one direction and, I don't know, rigid in the other direction. Is the formula generally to work both directions, but just like an extra rep? Or a little bit longer on the stiff side? Is it to just avoid the good side or work on stability in the one direction and mobility in the other direction? Is there a general rule of thumb that you're chasing?
That is a great place to start. And just to start noticing, I mean, that is already the first step, because with scoliosis, we are used to our pattern, right? So you can have somebody see them standing and they're completely wonky, right? They're lopsided. You can see it. One shoulder's higher than the other. They have all their weight over to one side. Their neck might be turning the other way. They don't know this, right? They will be like, well, I'm standing straight. You tell them to stand straight and they're like, well, I am, right? Because they are so used to being in that pattern.
Don't have the reference.
Yeah, exactly. So the first thing is really to starting to know. That's why movement is so powerful. Because yes, when you do a symmetrical movement and you are like, oh, I can do this on this side so much and I cannot do it on the other side as much, this is a great reference. Should you then spend a little bit more on the other side? Yes, I would also say hold yourself back on the good side, right? Because again, we've got our hypermobility tendency. Well, we don't want to go too much into end range, but we do want to work a little bit more on the other side. Once we really understand what's going on, though, so for example, if you have an S-curve scoliosis, which is 90%, something like 90% of the cases where it goes to the right in the thoracic, probably to avoid the heart, and then it goes to the left in the lumbar spine. Now you can imagine when you turn towards one side, you go further into your rotation naturally, but you're going against it lower down in the spine because you've got two curves and they're differently rotated, right? So whichever way you go, you are kind of going a little bit further into it. This is why the best thing, and this is how, interestingly enough, this is how surgery for scoliosis works. They kind of unwind and they lengthen. They don't bend the other way. They don't bend the spine the other way. That's never going to work. There's a little bit of unwinding, but the main thing is traction, is lengthening. So this is really number one thing to do is anytime before you do a movement, before you do a side bend, before you do your mermaid or whatever movement, before you do a triangle pose, anything like that, you want to find length and space in the spine. And that will be then a very, very different experience. So it's not so much, it's more about how you do it. And you might do it slightly differently on one side than the other.
That's interesting. It makes me think of those inversion tables. Like, I wonder if people use those to create space and almost like trust the inner wisdom of the body to straighten itself out a little bit, or at least help it along.
Now, if you look at scoliosis treatment from the Middle Ages, they would stretch you out, right? They would have you, and literally, there's like old images of these devices, they're literally like torture devices. So they pin people down on these tables and then they pull in opposite direction to not nice, right? But that's the idea, right? That elongation is a great thing. Inversion tables, yes, can be helpful if you're not super hypermobile again, because then you want there to be support and strength.
Could you, you touched a moment ago on that one direction of the curve is more common. What was that again? Like, can you give me a reference? So if you are you like facing the person and saying this or behind them with these?
You're looking at their back.
If you're looking at their back, you're saying it normally presents as an S.
Like a reverse S.
Oh,
so
like
it goes
S.
to the right.
Okay.
Yeah, S goes the other way. Yeah.
The spine goes to the right.
The spine goes to the right and then it goes to the left. So when you look at if you have an X-ray, a lot of people will have an X-ray. A lot of times that X-ray is taken from the front, which makes the whole thing a little bit more complicated. So you will have to figure out where that little R is for right on your X-ray. You can usually see the heart as well.
Gotcha. And how more common is it that one direction than the other?
A a lot more common. Now, when we get to adult degenerative scoliosis, this is a kind of a different thing. So once people are older and they get scoliosis because their discs are degenerating asymmetrically, there's forces that go into the body asymmetrically over time. You know, there's statistics of it's between 30 to 60% of over 60-year-olds have got some sort of scoliosis going on.
Wow.
So it's quite a lot in that department. I lost my train of thought now.
Sorry. Well, you were talking about the difference in you know, which side it goes to.
Which side, that's right. Yeah, thank you. So with adolescent scoliosis, it's much more straightforward. It's usually right thoracic, left lumbar.
So that if would also make the head want to compensate and go to left to stay level, or no, to the right.
The right shoulder will be higher. The right shoulder will be forward. And then the head to level itself out would slightly turn towards the right again.
Okay. So that might show up as like tension on the left neck because it's being pulled on.
Yeah.
Like some people, I know a common thing that people experience is they feel a tight muscle or area and they think it needs to be stretched. And oftentimes it's tight because it's already being stretched.
Yes.
It's being yanked on. And it's very counterintuitive to like where you need to go to straighten out.
Yeah, exactly. So with scoliosis, a lot of times it's the convex side, so the side that is the outward curvature, is the tight side. So most of the time, this is where people, they come to me and they say, it's really tight and it's tight all the time. Should I stretch it? And I say, well, let's think about this first. Let's kind of slow it down a little bit, because very rarely is stretching the solution. Very rarely. And it is that side that is chronically overstretched. It is always in an overstretched situation. That's why it's tight, because those muscles are kind of holding on for dear life to make sure you're not collapsing over to the side.
Yeah, I know. What's his name? Thomas Myers from Anatomy Trains. Yeah. Are you familiar? He talks about that as like a bow structure. Like when you see a bend in the body, think of like a bow and arrow, and that tension on the curved side, we experience that as tightness. So our instinct is to stretch it, but it's often the opposite of what
the opposite
need.
Exactly. So the best thing, I always say this, and I've got children. I think you've got kids as well, right?
I do. Yeah.
I like this analogy because there's usually one child that is louder than the other, right? And there's one child that will demand your attention all the time. And there's always something going on. And the other child might be a little bit more kind of quiet.
At the Mindful Movement Podcast, we talk a lot about the small shifts that make a big difference. And lighting, it's one of the most overlooked pieces of your well-being. That's why we're excited to share Chromalux light bulbs from healthlighting.com. These aren't your average light bulbs. Chromalux lights are designed to support your natural rhythms, reducing unnatural light spectrums and supporting a more balanced environment that feels better for your eyes and your mind. The difference is not just seen, but felt. Whether you're curating your workspace, winding down in the evening, or just trying to make your home feel a little more peaceful, the right light matters. Sarah and I have been steadily making the switch throughout our home, and its impact really makes a difference. It's honestly kind of hard to explain, but the space has become noticeably more inviting. If you're ready to bring more intention into your environment, head to healthlighting.com and explore Chromalux bulbs. And as a part of our mindful community, you can get a special discount. Just use code MINDFULMOVEMENT at checkout. Light your space, support your mind, and keep on moving. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you've probably heard me talk about how important it is to regulate your nervous system. This goes for healing, for focus, for just overall emotional well-being. But the reality is that even if we know the tools to help do this, whether it's breathing or meditation or just slowing down, it can still be really hard to stay regulated throughout a busy day. That's one reason I've really been interested in the Apollo Wearable by Apollo Neuro. Sarah and I both use this device regularly and have found it very beneficial. It's a small wearable device that uses gentle vibrations, and they're designed to signal safety to your nervous system. What's fascinating is that those signals can help your body shift out of a stress state and into a calmer, more regulated state. What I like about it, most of all, is that even though it can work great alongside practices like meditation or breath work, the real value is that you can wear it throughout your day, even while you're at work, and just let it work its magic on your nervous system. The other standout use that I rely on is wearing it to bed. Not only does it help me fall asleep fast, but I often wake up around 3 a.m. and I can just tap the button on it and it will help lull me back to sleep quickly. If you want to learn more, check out the podcast episode with the founder, David Rabin, and you could explore more about the technology itself. But if you're someone that struggles with anxiety or feeling wired or overwhelmed, or you're simply looking for more nervous system support in daily life, it might be something worth exploring. You can learn more about the Apollo wearable and how it works and save $99 on a new device at apolloneuro.com/mindful or click the link in the show notes. I promise you won't regret this investment. I truly believe it's the best bang for the buck in the wellness tech space.
Now, it doesn't mean that the quiet child doesn't have needs. It does need you just as much, right? And this is the same with those muscles. You've got that one side that is kind of screaming for attention all the time. It feels tight. The other side has kind of checked out. It's like it's a bit more quiet. It kind of quietly gets on with things, but it's starting to be less interested, right? So, and that can really feel, and some people can really feel this, that concave side feels like there's nothing going on. It's really, it doesn't give you any symptoms, but it's also not really helping you out. So that's the side that I would be focusing on. So can we strengthen that side? And by strengthening, I don't mean contracting it more. That's not what we want, but isometric, maybe even lengthening a little bit more before you start to strengthen it.
That's interesting. Okay. So not necessarily strengthening it right away. Is there anything that you feel is like a common, I mean, I guess we touched on a little bit of like kind of do's and don'ts, if you will, like mm-hmm. or myths. Are there any other common like myths or do's or don'ts, like recommendations around scoliosis in general for someone, maybe even if it's outside of like the movement world, even though I know that's your specialty just from all the years you've been hacking away at this?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, we've got kind of the principles of what's going on, right? So we've got a rotation coupled with a side bend. Now, this is exaggerated when you bend forwards. This is why when you get a diagnosis from your doctor, they will have you stand up, probably lock your knees, depending on how flexible the person is, and then they'll have you do kind of a rounded forward bend. So you have to really round your spine, bend forwards, and then they can see that rotation in the spine, right? That's the diagnosis. So every time you bend forwards, you're also slightly twisting, because that's just how this works. Mechanical movement, it goes further into rotation as there is flexion. So this is just something to think about in your day-to-day life, right? And it doesn't mean like do not ever flex your spine, because it is a functional movement. We need to be able to make that movement, and we don't want to lose the ability.
Sure.
To make that movement. But if we are, let's say, we're doing our gardening, right? And we are in this kind of hunched over position all the time, we have to remember we'll probably also be quite asymmetric. We'll also be, I mean, nobody is symmetrical when they do gardening, of course, but with scoliosis, even more. So when you're then done with that, you need to think about what can I do now to create balance again? Because what you don't want is that your muscles kind of get used to this position and then kind of you're getting stuck in your pattern, basically.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's like you don't want to avoid life, but you want to account for your life's you know, the things that you do commonly. Like
exactly.
I know that if I really notice this when I travel, like I have this routine where I'm on the floor at least twice a day. I'll have like a floor session, whether it might, could be 5 minutes, it could be an hour, where I am, I'm just trying to like nourish the basics, you know, and do a lot of things that are, I guess, are modeled off of like the developmental sequence, like what babies do. And I feel like it's like my reset. And if ever, like if I'm traveling, I don't get that opportunity, man, do the cobwebs grow quick. It's like, and every year I get older, it's like more and more important to do all that little nourishing stuff to kind of keep tuned up so that I can garden, so that I could do,
yeah.
Or like, I'm going to go, I've been getting into golf lately, back into it after like a decade off. And, you know, it's highly asymmetrical sport, like yes. most rotationals, you know, maybe the most asymmetrical sport there is, you know, or maybe some people call it a game, not a sport, but it's sport. And it's like when I get into my like gym, like my home gym, my sanctuary where I am doing my movement practice, it's very apparent, like my like craving or need to kind of go the other way.
Yeah.
To like do opposite things to feel like balance. But I don't want to stop golfing for it. Like,
no,
I don't want to stop gardening, but yeah, forever, just to be able to take note of like, well, I know that I do these things. I know that I'm in this environment. And for a lot of people, it could be just like, I know I'm at the desk. I work at a desk 9 to 5 or whatever. And to account for that in, you know, and find a way to sprinkle in those more positive environments in your lifestyle to kind of, I guess, fight the good fight, you know, and make up for the these chronic habits that we have with our positions in this domesticated lifestyle we've created for ourselves. We're indoor and on furniture and, you know, jacking ourselves up around the clock.
Absolutely. And I did have a keen golfer, actually, that I worked with one-to-one. And he was worried that I would say, no more golfing. Sorry, we're not doing that anymore. But, you know, that's the last thing I would want. You know, I want everybody to enjoy their movement. And we know that movement in general is good. But then when we kind of, we designed a little routine for him, there were no kind of rotations, no twists. He does that already in his golfing. He doesn't need to practice it. I needed to kind of make sure that I bring him back to stability, and we really work on lengthening through the spine. We did kind of a lot of work in the hips as well, just to make sure that he's got good mobility and stability in that way. So yeah, it's absolutely, it's a balance to whatever is going on in your life, and really the aim is to move well and to be well, not just now but also in the long term future.
Yeah, that makes sense. What else, Christine? What else do you have to say about scoliosis? Anything outside of the movement field that you feel you pay a lot of attention to personally or recommend to other folks?
I mean, yeah, we talked about nutrition, obviously, briefly. I'm not a nutritionist, so it's not my area of expertise. I do know that vitamin D is really, really important, and that's something that they really paying attention to, especially for adolescents, that they get enough vitamin D. Obviously, yeah, keep moving. What else did I want to say?
I wonder on the nutrition topic, like I would assume that a lot of people that deal with scoliosis have a pain associated with it.
Topic in itself. Right?
I know personally, like, and not just speaking for myself, that if my diet is off track and I get like generally inflamed, all my like long-term chronic things that kind of pop up here and there, they're more likely to show. Like I have a history of like low back pain, but if I'm eating really clean and I feel like my general inflammation is down, it just doesn't seem to be there. And then like I could have like one meal where I'm really off track, and then like my joints feel older. Like I feel like I'm generally inflamed. And then it's like it changes the threshold in which those long standing like problem areas kind of pass that pain threshold where now I feel it. I wonder, do you know, have you heard of people kind of experiencing that with scoliosis?
So first of all, there is no direct correlation between the size of a curvature of a scoliosis and pain. So not because somebody has more scoliosis, do they have more pain.
But I mean like general inflammation making the scoliosis specific pain they may have worse or vice versa. You know, if they lower general inflammation, can the pain associated with scoliosis decline?
Yeah, I mean, inflammation, absolutely. You've got that muscle tightness, obviously, that chronic imbalance. And then obviously we can go into the work that you guys do, obviously, as well. The nervous system plays a very, very, very big role in this. And if we think about it, about pain from that perspective, that really pain is a response from your nervous system that there is some sort of danger in your body, right? Whatever that might mean. It might be inflammation. It might be made up. It might not be real, right? It might just be your mother-in-law was, you know, was really unreasonable and was mean to you. It might be
stress. The mind is a powerful thing. It could work for you or against you.
Yeah, absolutely. But it all plays together. It all comes together and we cannot dismiss this. You know, sometimes people get a little bit like, no, you're not making up your pain, of course. You know, you're not imagining it. It is a real thing. But if you think about how can I come out of pain, we've got to think about soothing things. We've got to think about safety. We've got to think about how can I create more safety in my body. And that might be through nutrition, settling that inflammation. And it might be through stress reduction, relaxation, mindfulness, whatever it is, playing golf, being outside in nature, that can give you that sense of safety in your body. And I think that's a big problem for people with scoliosis because they do not feel safe in their body. They feel like, especially if somebody has seen what their spine looks like, they're like,
they're betrayed by their body or something.
My body has betrayed me. That's for a long time before I had kids. That was a thing where I was thinking about, can I actually have children? You know, things this. My body has betrayed me. I'll end up in a wheelchair. You know, things like this. These are real thoughts that go through people's minds. And obviously that can also have an effect then on what you feel in your body.
Yeah, that makes sense. I wonder if being pregnant could straighten things out. All that rearranging and stuff.
Rearranging things.
All that pressure.
If
just like the breath.
If you can tell the baby
expansion.
To be in a very specific position. I mean, I have to say, so my first pregnancy was more, I had probably more problems than my second. And it didn't make things, it's actually a time that usually makes things worse, funny enough, because we get more flexible in pregnancy, right? So it is important that we don't want to be afraid of it, but we want to make sure we are kind of, we're thinking about alignment a little bit as well.
Yeah, that makes
but
sense. It, yeah, there's a
it
hormone,
is a time of
elastin
change.
Or something that goes up to help you make space for
baby. For that, pregnancy, for the menopause. Terrible for scoliosis, unfortunately.
Well, that's fascinating. Are there any other like what's your like daily, I mean, you've been dealing with this for a long time. I assume you've built like some routines. Like, do you have some like structure to your like daily approach to support yourself so that you're like managing well? I don't want to say against scoliosis, it's like against yourself, but like, you know, in a way that, you know, supports your sense of well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, for me personally, are you talking about me personally?
Yeah, like you, like
generally?
what are like your daily staples as far as routines or practices that you feel like you really are your anchors?
Yeah. So, I mean, nowadays, at the moment, at this stage of my life, I do sit a lot. So first thing, again, is I'm thinking about what are the types of things that I'm doing most often during my day? Where is the danger of kind of getting stuck in my pattern? And previous times, it was kind of carrying kids around. But now my kids are older. They're teenagers now. They're in school. So I sit at my desk a lot, right? So there is a lot of kind of desk work that I do. So I'm thinking about moving. I think about, can I move my spine in all directions, all that they need to be moving? And then I think about elongation, you know, things like downward dog. Are great. Anything where you're kind of lengthening your spine.
No, I mean, like, how do you deploy this? Like, do you have, oh, I do this, I spend a half hour in the morning and a half hour in the afternoon. Like, what are your, like, actual rituals that you
rely
on? Yeah, if you will.
I don't know if I have any actual rituals. I think it's more a matter of, it's non-negotiable. So it's something I don't even have to think about it. It's a bit like brushing my teeth. I don't have to plan to brush my teeth. I just do it, right? Because it's so habitual. So if I am, so when I come off this podcast right now afterwards, we've been talking. So I've been sitting here for a good hour. I will then do some kind of something to reset, to rebalance myself. I will do a little bit of movement. I will do some elongation. It doesn't have to be long. This can literally be 5 minutes.
Gotcha.
But I'm much more kind of, these are more short things that I do throughout the day rather than saying I do practice 1.5 hours.
So like
yoga.
Movement snacks.
Yes.
What,
when
you say elongation, what does that look like for you? Are you like hanging over a ball or like, what is it? How do you do it?
So I've got, I don't know if you can see my wall ladder here.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Can you see that? So I like using that, just kind of bringing my hands up and then like a chair pose, so sitting back.
Gotcha. And like a modified hanging pattern.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Modified hanging with my feet down on the floor. I don't like the free hanging.
Okay. Why? Do you feel like that's too much because of the hypermobility or...
It would be too much in my shoulders. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I mean, I do, if I go to the gym, there's these pull-up machines, mm-hmm. right? That again are supported. So I really like those, for example. And sometimes I just kind of hang there and just, you know, that, and that feels great. And anybody who kind of feels compression can probably agree with me on that. So those are some really good things. And then I do as much upper body strengthening as I can, really, because that's my weakness.
Gotcha. And are you incorporating like a lot of rotation when you do that?
No.
Okay.
No. So this is something that I think, again, because I had this period of time where I did a lot of Ashtanga yoga, which is very vigorous and it's very end range movements. It's extreme back bends, extreme forward bends, extreme twists. Which can feel lovely.
Sure, yeah.
But in the long term, it just isn't the best strategy, unfortunately, for scoliosis. So it's kind of reining it in a little bit. So I think much more about stability. That's why.
So like anti-rotation as opposed to rotation.
Elongation
right.
is kind of the antidote.
Okay.
Stability practice. This is why Pilates is super, super useful for people with scoliosis. Not a lot of bending. And if I do bending, I think about where do I need to create space? Where do I need a little bit more opening?
Gotcha. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Well, Christine, Joe Reggie-Berry, it's been a pleasure.
That's it.
I really appreciate you reaching out. I've really enjoyed this conversation, learned a few new things about scoliosis. the moral is, if you have a 9-degree bend, don't worry about it. You're fine. Just kidding. Move with Scoliosis is your YouTube channel. Any other ways that people should find you or reach out to you?
I have a book. People want to start there.
I'm sorry. I did not know that. Yoga with Scoliosis. Okay. And where do they get that?
Yoga with Scoliosis. That you can get that on Amazon or anywhere else where there's books. Awesome. That's obviously more yoga based. The YouTube channel is probably the best way if you want to just kind of check it out a little bit, if you don't want to commit too much and just kind of have a look. And there's yoga practices, there's Pilates practices, just general kind of educational content.
It looks like you have a lot of content on there. It seems
I do. I do have my own podcast as well. It's called Back Chat.
Okay.
Where do I have? I have guests that are kind of specialists in that area as well, and always having some good conversations about scoliosis.
Oh, great. Well, Christine, like I said, it was a pleasure talking to you. And for the listeners, always grateful for your listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And I tell you, if you have experienced scoliosis, especially if there's something that you feel has worked for you, please share that in the comments and maybe help a community member out and learn something new. Hope you enjoyed the conversation, and I hope everybody has a great day. Thanks again.